So, brother man, what do you think?
I think that I love days when we do a rack and stack, but I really love when we're on the third of three, because these can get a little cuckoo. But you know what? Music will tame the savage beast, and we have got an awesome guest today that will do just that. What do you think?
Do we not? And my friends, we got Drew Hale from the Traverse City, Michigan area. And I asked Drew to jump on because I've met Drew two or three times in the Traverse City area up near where I live in the summer, watched him play several times in some of the local spots, and love his music. If you follow me at all, when I do some walk and talks, a lot of times I'll indicate who I'm listening to. And Drew's one of them that I'm listening to many, many, many times. Last night I was writing, working on trying to finish my book up, and I had Drew playing in my ear to give you an idea how much I love this guy's music. So anyways, why don't we, let me think here. What could we do? Oh, I know. Let's just bring Drew on. What do you think?
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Building Wins Live with host, the hybrid road warrior himself, Randy Chafee, and producer-director Wes Wyatt.
Whether we're talking about sales, marketing, tech, or industry news, we want to bring you the best tips, tricks, and info to build wins.
Now, let's get to the show.
Man, my Traverse City brother, how are you, pal?
Good. How you doing, Randy?
I could not be better. Could not be better. I'm down here in southern Florida, and it's been, luckily the thunderstorms let up just prior to my getting started on this recording today, because I mean it was rocking and rolling and flashing and but life is good. You?
Yeah, you know it's pretty good these days. You know, I'm spending a lot of time on the road. You know, weather wise, man, it's summertime in northern Michigan. You really can't beat it. You know,
that's the best.
I travel a lot, but I try not to leave home in the summertime. You know, we suffer through 6 months of winter so we can get the 10 days of summer, you know.
Yes,
so
you don't want to miss any of those 10 days. So before we get started talking about you, your life, your career, and everything else, I don't know, you're a musician. You probably should play us a tune. What do you think?
Yeah, sure will.
Let's do it.
I'll do that for you. This is a song that has done a lot for me this last year. We can talk some more about that in a minute.
Okay.
But this song was chosen by Lainey Wilson. I submitted for a competition. And so we'll talk about that too. But this is called River Jordan. And it goes like this.
Well, I went down to the river. I went down to the cleansing stream to let my burdens down beside the water. Broken, heavy-hearted, bound by shackles of shame, dragging all my chains down to the water. And I prayed, River Jordan, take me in, wash me clean of all my sin, rock me till my demons sleep, pray the Lord my soul to keep. River Jordan, take me in, hold me till I'm whole again. If I die beneath your waves, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Oh, River Jordan. Well, to the river, to the man by the cleansing stream. He took my hand and washed me down to the water. He asked what I believed in most, the Father, Son, or Holy Ghost. And I wept because I did not have an answer. But I prayed, River Jordan, take me in, wash me clean of all my sin, rock me till my demons sleep, pray the Lord my soul to keep. River Jordan, take me in, hold me till I'm whole again. If I die beneath your waves, I pray the Lord my soul to take. River Jordan, alone. Felt the rush of the cleansing stream. Start to wash my sins out into the water.
Sure, when I got unmuted, I must have done that to myself.
That's all right. We certainly didn't do it.
Oh, I must have done it. I don't know how I did it.
That's okay. That's okay. But that was a good song. So that's fairly new.
Yeah, it sure is. It's newer to most everyone. This is one that I did as part of a competition called the Tractor Supply Emerging Artist Program. I submitted this last March, and there were five Nashville mentors that each picked one song out of the submission, one artist that they wanted to mentor for the next year. And Lainey Wilson picked my song. I've been working with her for the last year or so. Did a bunch of shows during CMA Fest with her last year in Nashville. And then the biggest thing is I got to play the Grand Ole Opry stage with her back in October. That was just a huge thing for me. It's kind of a lifelong goal for me. So got to do that. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, I'll bet. Lainey is. She's good. I like her a lot.
Yeah, she's fantastic, man.
So you got to play the Grand Ole Opry.
Sure did.
That's the ultimate, right?
It really is. You know, for me, there doesn't get a whole lot more lofty than the Grand Ole Opry. You know, when you play there, you're really somebody, you know, and they take really good care of their artists and they're just great humans. Got to know a lot of the folks that kind of run the Opry there and kind of work behind the scenes. And it's just a really cool thing to be part of. So I love that my name gets to be down in the annals of, you know, the performers of the Opry. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. That's something you'll have forever, man. That's awesome. Congrats. So I think you went down to the old Opry downtown. I believe I saw some posts with you and some of your family or whoever was down in front of the old hall that's pretty amazing in itself too, right?
Yeah, so I actually got to play the Ryman stage as well back in 2016.
Oh, did you?
There was another competition I did called it was called the Texaco Country Showdown, and it had been going on for like 35 years, and it had been sponsored by Hole. It was like the Marlboro Country Showdown for a while, the Colgate Country Showdown for a while, and basically it's this grassroots competition that's sort of like The Voice or American Idol, where you have to go and compete in different rounds. There's a local round, a state round, a regional round, and then it culminates in a national round. And the national round took place at the Ryman. And that year, back in January 2016, I actually won that whole competition, won the national round and $100,000 grand prize, that kind of stuff. So that kind of kicked my career off. I've kind of been on the road pushing that ever since.
I went there with the Dixie Chicks once, and it was in Nashville, which I love. I love everything about Nashville. Which I'm going to have to ask you a question. Which is your favorite little honky tonk bar down on the strip in a minute? But I remember walking in there and thinking George Jones stood on this stage, right? It's some of the greats. It's special. It's a special place.
Well, you can really feel that when you're on stage too. It's funny. They, the people that ran the competition, you know, I got to know them really, really well throughout the thing. We got to be friends, and they were walking me through the Ryman, right before we played, you know, and she's like, you know, when you walk, you know, just take a minute when everybody's gone and when it's just empty in there and just walk out on that stage and listen. She's like, you, there's just something spiritual about that place. You know, you can feel the history and the voices and the, you know, and she said, if you respect that stage, it'll respect you. I've seen people come in here and just not, you know, do their own thing and not listen, not take the time to respect the space, and it never goes well for them. So, you know, I took her advice. I went and I stood there and I thanked the people that had come before, you know, for the opportunity and to be able to be part of that space alongside their names. And man, I tell you what, that was, you know, playing at the Mother Church of Country Music. That was an unbelievable experience. And as much as the Opry was cool, the Ryman was a highlight of my career because I got to play my own music at the Ryman. The Opry, I sung with Lainey and did a song with her, but at the Ryman, I got to play my stuff. So my next goal is to get up on the Opry stage and play my own music.
Nice. I think it'll happen. I think you should play. What's the Great Lakes song? I always get that wrong.
It's called Great Lakes Summer Night. Yep.
That's my favorite song by Drew Hale, by the way.
I appreciate that. It's been a big hit up here for me. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of streams on that one that gets played on the radio regularly. And it really is just kind of a celebration of the way we do summertime in the North. You know, I've done summer in a lot of places and we've traveled all over the place, but there's nothing like coming back home to the Great Lakes. Yeah. So that's really what it's all about.
Well, we get 10 days as we talked.
Absolutely.
You know, you got to jam it in.
I love summer in Northern Michigan. Last year was on a Wednesday, you know, like.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to be prepared and you got to be ready. Depending on what you do for work, you may need to call in at a moment's notice because it's summer today all of a sudden.
Sorry, I can't work today.
Yeah. Could you do it on the boat tomorrow? No, tomorrow will be winter again.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow's a 16 inches of snow. We have 70 degrees and sunny today. We're gonna go.
Exactly. So tell us about working with Lainey a little bit and how your career. Let's talk about your career. How in the world did Drew get into music?
Man, I've been connected with music in some form. I mean, literally as long as I can remember. My family has pictures of me, you know, 5 years old with a ukulele in my hands pretending I was Elvis, you know. And my family's real musical. You know, I grew up in church and I kind of cut my teeth on a big stage at a Texas mega church, you know. I grew up in El Paso, Texas, and, you know, I kind of cut my teeth playing music in church. But I also, you know, I did it all the way through school. I always did choir and bands, and I was in rock bands. And then getting into college, I just pretty much played any style of music with anybody I could. You know, I tried to make all my extra money that way. At that point, it was kind of a part-time gig for me. But I just played as often as I could. Music has just always been – like my mom told me one time, she's like, there's some people that love music, and then there's some people that are music. You know, it's just – it's in you. And I feel like that's just – that sums me up and who I am. There's nothing else I've ever even really wanted to do. This is, you know, kind of my calling, as it were. It's what lights me up. And so I've been doing this in some form or another since I was little. I started doing it professionally back in 2003. I took over this music director position at the church I grew up in El Paso, you know, 25,000 member church, big old sanctuary, and, you know, five services a week and all that. And so I kind of hit the ground running with that, cut my teeth on how to be a leader, how to, you know, direct a band, how to take care of band members and put people's schedules together, how to book things, how to, you know, organize a department, you know. So it was really kind of – it was music training, but it was also like leadership training. So from there, it really – it became much easier as I was doing these competitions and as I'm performing and having to use a house band in Nashville or whatever. Just the knowing how to run a rehearsal and how to direct musicians, you know, it's especially when I was doing the Country Showdown, you would watch these younger artists come up and try to play with a band, and they didn't really have much experience directing, you know, so the band just kind of like, well, we'll try this. And, you know, so it was really tough for them to look and feel confident because they didn't really know what the band was going to play. They didn't know what to expect. It was going to sound different than what they had practiced. And so being able to come in and say, hey, guys, this is what I want. This is the tempo. You know, I needed to build here. I needed to cut here. I feel like it kind of gave me an advantage, you know, and I really have kind of my roots to thank for that. You know, just the getting into music and the church music and coming up playing in rock bands and things, you know, that that gave me the ability to be able to do that, win that competition, and now I do this full time. So it was a weird series of things, but I'm grateful, and I wouldn't have changed a single one of them.
Most things are weird things. When you finally end up doing what you love and loving what you do. Most of the time, it takes a strange and weird road to get there, right? Most people aren't doing it at 40 or 50 or 60 years old. What they thought they were going to be doing maybe at 12.
Yep. Everybody's got that dream job. I mean, I thought I was going to be an astronaut at 12, so, or at, you know, at six at least. Probably by the time I was 11, I knew that I wanted to do music. You know? So it's been most of my life.
So how did you end up from El Paso, Texas, to the Traverse City, Michigan area?
So I grew up in El Paso. You know, like I said, I did church music, and so I had been working for them full time for years, and it was such a big ministry, like a big church ministry volunteer. I had 120 volunteers under me. I was the only staff member. So I was just absolutely screaming, running 24 hours a day. I mean, I probably worked 60, 70 hours a week on the regular. So at one point, I knew if I ever wanted to have a family that I needed to slow down a little bit. So moved to Northern Michigan. I was looking for jobs. Ended up moving up here to take a job at a small little church in Traverse City. And that, you know, that kind of got me there. I was there for 3 years, and then there was a change in the leadership, and they kind of cleaned house with the people he had hired. And, you know, that kind of put me on my own for a while. I worked for another church in Traverse City for 5-ish years. And then when I won the country showdown, I decided I was just going to do my own thing full time. So I went on the road, recorded an album, bought a bunch of equipment and a van, and off we went.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So tell us about life on the road touring. That's got to be a different lifestyle than – I mean, I'm on the road quite a bit as a manufacturer's agent or rep, but it's a whole little different. What you're doing. New different talent every night, that kind of thing. Tell us what the life of Drew is.
We spend a lot of time in there. Like I said, I stay home a lot in the summer. So I do have kind of my local venues that have really taken care of me that I pour into when I come back, you know, that I always make sure I'm playing and supporting. Mm-hmm. But life on the road, usually we start traveling again like late September, and that takes us through like Memorial Day. So we'll travel usually 3 to 4 days at a time when we travel, and then we'll have some days off because the guys I play with right now, they're not full-time musicians. They've got other jobs and careers, so they take time off, or they're able to work for themselves and they can work from the road. So, you know, we usually travel, you know, Wednesday or Thursday through Sunday or Monday generally, you know, and we'll go to – we got a couple of venues in Pittsburgh that we go to. We'll get down to Chicago from time to time, even get to, you know, Nashville, Alabama, Texas. We've played shows in Oklahoma. We played shows in Missouri. You know, we just kind of go where the shows are. And really, we haven't done as much traveling as we did before COVID. These days, we're finally getting back down, you know, and I've got a booking agent now out of Nashville. So I'm excited to be able to do some more traveling and do some bigger things this year. But man, life on the road, it depends. I've got 3 kids and they have traveled with me since they were babies. So a lot of times they come with me and they're just road trip champs. You know, I mean, my oldest son, Hunter, one time I forget where we were traveling, but he's like, "Hey dad, how long do we have to go today?" I was like, "Today's like 8 hours." It's like, "Oh, not bad." You know, like what kid says that, you know?
Right.
They've grown up with it. You know, so I don't think they don't really know much different. You know what I mean? So having a family and being on the road is great. And the guys I travel with, God bless them, man. They are just so gracious. They're good with my kids. They're just really go with the flow guys. I just, when I choose guys in the band, I choose guys to travel with, you know, I tell people this all the time, especially young artists, like, yes, you want good musicians. I mean, you want people that can handle your set list, But at the end of the day, you want somebody that's a good hang and that you just enjoy their company.
Right.
More than being a good musician. Because I've had it before where we have excellent musicians and they just don't fit the DNA. You know what I mean? So there's that connection, and it never ends up going well. So I'm very careful at this stage who I travel with. And the first, requirement is you got to be a good hang.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. You spend a lot of time with them. And with music not being a musician at all. I told you the story pre-show that I was sixth tier out of five in sixth grade band. That was it for me. But it's got to be that family connection, right? With each other. You got to play off of each other. You got to love being with each other. Probably more so than anything else, I would think.
Yeah. When you travel with somebody, it's kind of like, it's a little bit like being in a foxhole together. You're in the ditches together. You're going through things, and it bonds you like nothing else does being on the road. So I'll tell you what, like my bass player, John Paul, is probably my just very best friend. He knows all my stuff. He has seen me at my absolute worst because, life on the road is not easy, and there's a lot of frustrations. You can even when you have a plan, most times things don't go exactly to plan. So you're always rolling with the punches, and it took me a long time to learn how to just – all right, we're going to be calm. We're going to troubleshoot this. You get real good at troubleshooting on the road. But, John has seen me at all of my stages, and he was with me before I was anybody. So guys like that, those are the kind of relationships you build on the road. And it's just really cool, and now he's got kids, and I've got kids, and they're, similar life stages. So we can talk about that. It's just really cool to have guys that you have a lot in common with on the road. I think it's a necessity.
That would make sense. So how old are your kids?
I've got 11-year-old twins and a 12-year-old.
Oh, wow.
All boys. Yep. They're all three adopted out of foster care. They're 10 months apart.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep. And we've had them since they were we got Hunter at 9 months, and then 6 months later got the call that there were 6-month-old twins coming into care, and we were the first call. So we skipped right over two kids, and within 7 months we had three. Under 18 months.
Man, that's a hell of a ride, man.
That is a hell of a ride.
And I got to tell you, you just went up another thousand levels on my Love Drew list because that's doing God's work, my man. I'm a big fan of adoption. I was adopted at three days old. Only child, which anybody that gets to know me very long would not be surprised that only child syndrome does exist. I'm not saying it's all about me, but it's kind of all about you. Yeah, pretty much. But I just love that. So, like I said, that's my favorite part of you now. It was your music. But the fact that you stepped up like that, man, that's good stuff right there, brother.
Aside from the Opry, probably the best thing I've gotten to do as part of my career was back in 2015. I did a TED Talk and kind of told my family story and how the boys came into care and just kind of got to brag on my boys. And then I sung a song at the end that I wrote about Hunter being adopted and him coming into our lives. And so you can find that on YouTube or whatever and search up. It's a TEDx talk. And it's a lot of fun. So I do a lot of speaking about foster care and adoption as well. For a couple of the different agencies in Traverse City, I've gotten to come down to Nashville and do some talks. Every chance I get, I try to talk to people about foster care and adoption and raise awareness. It's a huge part. The center of bullseye for my heart is child welfare in general.
Yes.
So many of my best friends are social workers. It's pretty cool how that works.
That is. No, seriously. Wow, I thought I knew a lot about you, and I learned something today, and that's good stuff, brother.
Thank you.
Be proud. So this song about Hunter, you get that on YouTube under TEDx, but is it available other places on YouTube as well?
It's not one I've ever recorded.
Okay.
It was one that was just kind of special. I did it as part of the TED Talk, and then it never really became anything after that. It was just kind of a you know, and I'll probably end up pulling it back out at some point. But there is a song that you can find that was written about my boys, and it's actually a Christmas song. I put it on a Christmas album a few years ago, and that's called Three More Branches. And that is about the first Christmas that we had all three boys. Mm-hmm. You know, and just sitting under the tree realizing that, like, I've got three more branches on my family tree. So it's, you know, talking about Christmas time, but also our family. And it was just really cool. So if people are interested in that, you can find that and all the rest of my music on all the streaming services under Drew Hale. I got a whole bunch of new singles out this summer. I've put 5 out this summer, and I'm about to drop another full-length album September 3rd. So nice. Lots and lots to look at.
So that's – I'll tell anybody that listens. Top-notch stuff, and I really do listen. I'm not going to say every day because then I would be blowing smoke at you, but there's 10 times a week I've got you up on Spotify.
Oh, I appreciate that, man.
And it's just the sound, the tone, the stories. Are perfect. And I think you would agree, and I'm coming as a novice, that the best music is when it truly tells a story. And you're a great storyteller with your music. And do you come up with a story and then write a song, or do you have this idea and then come up with the lyrics, if you will?
You know, that's probably the most standard question I get asked. You know, what's the process? What do you come up with first? And I think, you know, what I tell people is that songs are a little bit like people. Every single one of them has its own personality. It's got its own idea. Each song kind of knows what it wants to be. And if you listen to it through the process, it'll tell you what it wants to be. You get good at that. That's when you start really writing songs that impact people. I've never been a big proponent of writing hit songs. I've been in sessions where we're trying to write something that's radio based, but to me, I think music is more effective than it is. It's more effective than what people hear on the radio. You know, everything on the radio is mostly about having a good time or drinking or picking somebody up in a bar. That's not my bag. I tend to talk more about the human experience. I tend to talk more about struggle. I tend to talk more about mental health. Especially this album that's about to come out. I talk a lot about mental health, about self-love, about learning to deal with frustrations and loss, learning to find yourself in the midst of tough circumstances. And, you know, I think to me, that's what music is about, you know. And if something happens to catch and take off, you know, I'm not mad about that at all, but that's not what I write for. You know, at this stage, I've been doing this most of my life. And, you know, I'm not looking for a record deal right now necessarily. I mean, if somebody came to me with the right deal, we'd talk, but I'm not just taking the first deal that comes my way. I really have an idea of who I am as an artist, of what I want out of this. And right now I'm doing pretty well on my own. So I'm just going to keep building that and make them come to me. That's kind of the idea right now.
That's interesting because what I'm hearing you say is if you're a musician, an artist, There's a process if you say, I want to write a hit song, a song that's going to get traction, but it may not mean much to you, it may not mean much to anybody, but it meets all the boxes, right?
Exactly.
And you're saying, no, I'm going to play, if you listen to what I've said at least three times before and listen to Drew live, and the stories are real. And when you listen to you play and sing them, I hear the story, right? And that's way more important to me than just a bunch of fireworks and skyrockets and all that stuff.
A bunch of country buzzwords and a song.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, there really is a formula to Nashville and to what gets on the radio. I mean, and if you are keen enough to hear it, there are particular progressions that get repeated. Everything's kind of a similar tempo, all that pop country stuff. Mm-hmm. It's got all the same electronic sounds in it. And I like real instruments, real vocals, mm-hmm. not, you know, without a ton of auto tune. You know, I want to keep it as, what would be the word? Authentic.
Yeah.
As authentic as possible. Real music played by real people. And I would rather have imagery that speaks to people, you know, that speaks to me. What I tell my songwriting students all the time, that's another thing when I'm not on the road, I'm teaching songwriting. I teach, you know, guitar and piano, but mainly I coach songwriters. And what I tell them is when you're writing something, especially, you know, they always get so scared to get so specific. You know, I think that's, well, it's not going to appeal or speak to a large number if I'm just talking about my life. And what I keep telling them is, regardless, if you feel it, they're going to feel it, you know, because this is so much of communication of emotion, even more so than a conversation about a particular topic. So when you're writing about something, you know, if you feel it, they're going to feel it, you know, and if you're using things that speak to you that are from your experience, what I've found, I have a song called El Paso Skyline. This is a perfect example. I wrote that song about a homesick day when I was missing home. It was probably a year or two after I moved to Northern Michigan. So I was just missing home, missing my friends, missing my mama. Like it just and I wrote this song and it has all of these imagery. Excuse me, all this imagery from El Paso talks about the skyline and the star on the mountain, which is a huge iconic thing in El Paso. And I used all these images and here I am thinking, oh, well, this is going to be a song about me. But over the last, you know, 8 years that this album has been out, I get people coming to me all the time. I love El Paso Skyline. Man, when you sing about that, I picture my high school or I picture this. You know, you're at my high school blue and gold, but I see my high school and my, you know. So it was so funny how my personal experiences and my imagery left so much room for other people. It was just like a suggestion. Other people began putting their own imagery in it. So I tell my students, you know, there's something really powerful about being vulnerable about a situation or being vulnerable about where you come from. You know, really tell, you know, let yourself be known, and people will take that and love it. And then because they love it so much, they will elicit their own feelings and imagery and connection with that song. And that's when you make a fan. That's when you have a song hook someone. It's right, not right. necessarily just the repetition of the chorus. It's not the melodic line. It is really that connection with other people. And that's what I'm trying to go for in my music. More of a, you know, human connection rather than just a song that sticks in your head.
Okay. Makes perfect sense. El Paso Skyline. Mm-hmm. I'll check that out. So as we kind of wind down, because you've been very free with your time, which I appreciate. I do have to ask the question I asked earlier, or thought about earlier. Downtown Nashville, down on the strip, if you will. I'm sure you've been there more than I have, but I've been there quite a bit. What's your favorite honky tonk downtown?
To be honest, Randy, I stay the hell away from Broadway.
Do you? Okay. You have the West End?
Yeah, I stick to East Nashville. I'll go out to Franklin.
Okay.
You know, I don't necessarily have a favorite honky tonk. I don't even I'm so ADD. Like all the lights and the sounds and the people. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I'm a performer and my job is people, but I get really bad social anxiety when I walk into a crowd or when there's a lot of people in the room. So walking downtown, you know, I'll go sometimes like if I'm going to hear a friend, and if I had, you know, gun to my head, I had to pick a particular honky tonk, I'd probably say I love Tootsie's. It's crammed as hell in there. Tootsie's or Valentine's. There's a rooftop bar on Valentine's that I love.
Is that near the M?
It's pretty much in the middle, right before I think it's like 4th Street. So it's almost down at the end. But it's a cool bar. But I will say off Broadway, kind of our home bar to play at for a long time was Wild Horse Saloon, which is right there on 2nd Street. And that has gotten bought out and is opening up as Luke Combs.
Oh, it is. Place here pretty soon.
So we'll be playing there, hopefully starting this fall and getting back into rotation there. But if I had to pick a place down there, it'd be those two places. But I love the Wild Horse Saloon. It's going to be – I think Category 10 is going to be the name.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm stoked about that. I love that place. That's a lot of fun.
When I get into town – because I agree with you. It's a little much on Broadway. It's a little crazy. I like to stay out on the West End. Because I found a lot of little honky tonk bars out there. Still some good musicians, but you can actually sit and have a couple beers, have a beer with the musician, get to know people, you know, and it's just more locals. And I like that.
And if you get down, there's a couple offshoots. Like there's one called Printer's Alley. Alley has the Rainbow Room and oh my gosh, snakes. It's basically it's like an old 1920s speakeasy, and they have like all different kinds of stuff. But you walk in and it's jazz and like big band stuff. That place is fantastic. I love Printer's Alley. You can go down. There's Alley Taps. There's you know all these places that kind of what I don't like about the Strip in Broadway in Nashville is that there's you're going to hear the same 25 covers from different levels of artists in every single place. It's like the same songs coming out all the time, and they're all covers. It's all people want. But when you hit to the offshoots, they want more of your stuff. Like I try to do more writers rounds. Places where I can do my own music. I mean, I don't mind doing covers. We do, you know, the way I like to do covers is I'll take something and just completely make it my own style where it sounds like me. I hate doing covers exactly the way it is on somebody's record. You know, and I want to make it my own. So I love doing covers, but I want them to be ones that are in my style that fit with the rest of my songs and fit stylistically and content wise. And, you know, so I'll play more places that are kind of 50-50 where I can do both.
Perfect. So if people go to your website, they can find where you're going to be playing.
They can. Yep. They can connect with me on all my socials there. And everything on social media is Drew Hale Live, just like DrewHaleLive.com. You can find me that way. Yeah. And there's all kinds of stuff. We have all the things. Wherever you connect on social, we've got it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it. Love it. So appreciate being on, my friend. Love what you do. Should ask a question. When you're doing these kind of things, or just chatting with somebody at a venue, and you get to chatting about your life, your music, what do you wish people would ask but seldom do?
You know, it's so funny. I was just thinking about this the other day. So many people come up to me, and I think they mean it as a compliment, but it kind of like, oh man, you're so talented. Yeah, I don't know how you. You're so talented, so talented. And to me. Yes, I appreciate that. You know, some of this is just what I happen to be born with, and it's just the love of music that's in me. But, man, they talk about becoming a master of something after 10,000 hours. I've put my 10,000 hours in to play music, to write songs, to play guitar, to sing. I mean, I've done it my whole life. And what people, I think, don't realize is how hard it actually is to have a career in music. It is a grind. An absolute grind. So what I wish people would ask is like, hey, so how'd you get here? Like, how did you become able to do this? Because it's not like I woke up one day and, oh, I can play and sing. Like, I sat in my room from the age of 13, you know, all the way through high school. I didn't have very many friends then. Just people I knew from church or people I played football with or whatever. I would sit in my room when everybody else was going to parties and hanging out. I'd be in my room sitting in front of a radio trying to, you know, learn a song by ear from the radio. And that time, you know, the sacrifice of practicing, daily practice, I mean hours a day practicing, led me to be able to what I'm doing now. Yes, there's some natural gifting in there just based on who I am, but 90% of why I'm able to do what I do is because I spent most of my life preparing for that. So when somebody comes up and it's like, oh, you know, it's great. Gosh, you just have such talent, you know. I appreciate that, but it's like it almost negates all of the work that was put into getting where I'm at. So I wish people would ask a little bit more about, you know, what did you have to do to get to this point? What did, you know, because I love talking about practicing and how to do that and what songs work and what the methods are. That's part of what I do as a coach. But yeah, that's the way. How'd you get here? How did you end up being able to do this?
Well, I think that's a lot of the stories, because, you know, thinking about as guys, and a lot of girls too, I don't want to be like sexist here, but as a couple guys talking, we like to put things into sports analogies at times. And for all the high school, college, and professional level of what Michael Jordan, my favorite, in my opinion, the greatest basketball player, but that's an opinion. But for that little bit of time in his career, tiny little bit of time under the TV lights, performing at a high level, it's thousands of X more getting thrown out of gyms because the janitors got to close the gym because I'm going to shoot 25 more free throws and 100 more threes, right? And people forget all that because they would see a Michael Jordan just like they would see a Drew Hale. Well, you just got natural talent, so you show up and you play some music, and boy, isn't that great, right?
Yeah, and then head home. Yeah. And people that are like, you know, oh, it must be nice to just work, you know, a couple hours and then go home. Like, you don't understand. You know, there's behind the scenes, there's booking and there's contracts and there's learning songs. There's putting together band rehearsals. There's, oh my gosh, carrying the absolute, like, metric ton of equipment that we have to set up when we play a band show. And we do that all that ourselves. We load in, load out. I'm not to the point in my career where I can have roadies and guitar techs. If I break a string on stage, I have to bass and drums has to or play something real quick while I go and change a string, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of work that people don't see.
Right.
All they see is the product. They don't see the prep.
Right. Right. So when people another word that gets used a lot is lucky.
Yep.
Well, it must be lucky to be able to do what you do. And again, you're right. They don't see the – well, let's put it this way. The more hours that you put in over the last 20, 30 years of your life, it's what made you, quote, lucky, right?
Yep, it is. I mean, you make your own luck. I fully believe that. You know, I'm a poker player, so – you know, you make your own luck. You know, it's strategy and it's hard work and it's pushing through. I have been told no hundreds of times by booking agents, by record labels, by venues, by other bands, by people. You get used to hearing no, and you just keep pushing. You just keep pushing. And, you know, eventually somebody's going to say yes. Law of averages, you know, somebody's bound to say yes. So you just keep pushing till somebody does.
Yes. Have the belief. So again, thank you. Two last things. If you would give us one more song on the way out of here.
Sure. And don't go away when we get done.
We'll do a quick sign off and then we'll come back and chat with you for a minute if you don't mind.
Why don't I do that Great Lakes Summer Night
song? Oh, let's do it. Folks, my favorite song. My favorite Drew Hale song. Let's play the whole thing. Let's do it.
All right.
Should I go get a Cabernet first?
One more time?
Should I go get a Cabernet first?
Usually I listen to you with a Cabernet. I do love me a good Cabernet, man. As long as you've brought enough to share, I'm down.
Oh man, next time I'm in Traverse City, we're going to get one together.
That sounds great to me, man.
All right, brother. All right, let's go.
Sun goes down and we ride, leaving all our cares inside. next to you as we ride, leaving all our cares inside. Cause we know that winter's coming soon enough to break out the bottle and fill your cup. It's fine to party all night long. It's time to grab the one you love and slide on over in a beach chair. Pop that top on a cold beer and unwind on this Great Lakes summer night. On this Great Lakes summer night.
Yes. Good stuff, buddy. Good stuff, my man. All right. Hey, Drew, thank you so much. Folks, follow Drew, follow everything on his, listen to him. You're going to love him. If you get a chance to see him live, tell him Randy said hey.
Love it.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Keep bringing that music to us, brother.
Will do, sir.
All right. Thank you, bro.
Take care.
Bye. All right. As you all know, I'm a big fan of Drew's, and when I tell you that I listen to him often, that's not a lie. So happy that he could find the time to jump on with us. Love his music. Follow him. And he's doing what I talk about all the time, loving what you do and doing what you love, right? That's what he's doing. He's following his love of music, and he stuck to it over a lot of long, hard nights on the road, and as he talked about, and that's just good stuff. So follow Drew. Thank you for being on today. As always, we love bringing on some amazing guests. And so remember, live it, love it, own it. I already said it, but I'll say it again. Love what you do and do what you love. And go make today your best day ever. Till tomorrow. Cheers, my friends.
Thank you for listening to Building Wins Live.
You can find information on Randy, Wes, our guests, show notes, and anything related to the podcast at buildingwins.live. On behalf of the whole Building Wins team, don't forget, make today your best day ever. Until tomorrow.